So, hi, fellow players of Command & Conquer Tiberian Alliances. This is Spencer G, and I've got with me Totalax.
Hey, guys.
And we want to welcome you to the third installment of Repair Time, which is our final planned installment from World 44. First of all, we want to thank you guys for listening so far, and thank you for your positive feedback. For us, it's been a lot of fun, hasn't it, Total?
Oh, yeah, man, absolutely. And I was just thinking, we actually did save the best for last, didn't we?
The best?
Yeah. We got the two top factions of World 44 today. So these guys have been fighting each other for the dominant position since the birth of the server.
Surely not. So that would mean, like, we've got the Lion of Lions, Krunk, from the Of War group, and Wombus from the Most Noble of Newts.
Yeah, no, that's correct, man. We got them.
Nice. So you were on your own for this one, right? Due to some time zone differences?
Yeah, these guys are both in the States. So, we try to set up something and have us both there. But I ended up marching in there all alone with these big baddies.
Hey, man, I'm sure you did an outstanding job.
I'm sure I did.
So let's get down to it, huh?
Yeah, here it is. Episode 3. Guys, so we're back here with part 3 of our podcast on Tiberium Alliances World 44, and this time it's a real treat. We got some big shots. Well, I guess I would like to say in the room, but on Skype we got from the Noble Newts, we got Wombus.
Hello.
And from, should I say Lions of War, should I say the Of War group, we have Krunk.
Either or both is fine.
And for those who don't know World 44, this is where the main battle has taken place. These are the bigger blocks, the biggest alliances, the biggest blocks. Just had a big war, and we thought we'd bring them in today to talk about alliances. So how you been, guys?
Doing good.
Yep, same here.
And you guys are both from the U.S., right?
Correct.
By chance, we are on a European server, and we're both from the U.S.
Could you guys just tell a little bit first about how you kind of stumbled into the game, how you found it, and, you know, is this your first world, or how did you start on World 44? So let's start with you, Krunk.
I came to World 44 with the Lions from, I believe it was World 30, where we were about the 6th or 7th ranked alliance as a feeder for the main alliance, and when the main alliance decided that they didn't need feeders anymore and started to eat their young, we decided we didn't want to wait around until we were eaten. And as a group, we gathered about 30 of us, decided to come over, and we waited for the next world to open, which happened to be 44. And we landed in mass in about 20, 30 minutes' time and started digging. This is my second world. I came into the game because my son, who is 15, was enjoying the game and wanted to, if you have teenage children, you'll understand the irony, actually wanted to spend some time playing a game with me, and it was a game that was intellectual enough that I could play it with him. And about 3 weeks in, he dropped down to playing once every week or two, so it ended up just being me, and I got addicted, and here I am.
Yeah, I saw where that was going.
But every alliance needs an awful lot of young people with too much time and no money, and a few older people with not so much time but a little bit of money.
Yeah, that is always true, and I think that's a good part of the business case for this game, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So Wombus, man. So how did the Newts get started?
Sure. So I stumbled across this game. I had played Tiberium Sun, which is a different game. It's more of an RTS than this one. It's a little bit different if you're not familiar. But having a good history with that, I saw this game advertised. I figured I hadn't really played any video games for quite a while, so I wasn't going to play this. Eventually that changed, and I ended up giving it a try. It was just myself and my brothers. We started up in some world that I can't even remember. We played for about 5 days and decided it was really boring, because at that point that world was already really well along, and we recognized with the way that the game is designed there was no chance that we could catch up. So we kind of assumed that the whole game was a joke and then just stopped. A few days later, my soon-to-be father-in-law, who is also in that world with us, sends me a text message in the middle of the night and says a new world opened. Do you want to give it a try? I said, yeah, why not? And decided to start an alliance. Originally, I don't even remember what it was named, but not the Noble Newts.
Yeah, I'm going to get back to that name later on.
Sure. Yeah, so we landed in the South. Still really had no idea how to play the game, but I recognize that the more people you have, the better. So we just invited as many people as we possibly could. That sort of got us rolling. Luckily, we had recruited a few people that had played before, so they started killing bases. We didn't really understand why they were doing that. Like, those look a lot harder. Why would you kill those? But eventually, we figured it out. As the weeks went by, we learned different stuff, learned about the simulator, learned about, you know, different scripts, and went from there.
Well, that's actually quite impressive, man. I was sure that you guys came as at least a tiny group from another world with some alliance experience there, bro. Well, and, you know, looking at your performance on this world.
Well, myself and Dean both came with virtually no experience. We brought my two brothers along and a couple of our real-life friends who quit after, like, 3 days. So, essentially, yeah, we ended up getting really lucky, I guess.
Fantastic. So, but this is, kind of like a family thing then. And that's pretty impressive. You got your brothers there, you got your father-in-law there.
Yeah, well, he's not my father-in-law yet, but it's been fun to play with him. And unfortunately, as I said, my brothers only played for the first couple of days, so that kind of fell out. They're still in high school, so they often don't have much time, especially in a game where you have to check on pretty regularly. But it's still a lot of fun.
Did you guys kind of recognize each other early on as competitors? I can't remember how the rankings were the very first weeks of the game, but did you guys kind of see where the competition were at early on?
Again, having no idea how the game worked, I didn't really know what I was looking at. All I saw was, hey, your alliance is getting more people, and that means your rank is going up. That's good. I wasn't really paying attention to who was around me. I didn't recognize that I should be paying attention to that. So I honestly don't actually remember being aware of that until later. So Krunk probably can speak better to that than I. I'm pretty sure we shot up to the second rank pretty quickly and stayed there for most of the beginning of the game. But I don't remember what was going on around us.
That's fairly accurate. They were second rank within about the second week of the server. We landed with two or three officers in charge of a couple of different duties, one of which was surveying the opposition and trying to keep track of who was moving in and who was taking POIs strategically so that we could try to figure out who the primary competitors would be. It always breaks into six or eight alliances from the looks of the servers. So if you can identify those six or eight fairly early, you can figure out who the problems are going to be. Yeah, TNN was definitely on the radar very early. We had one guy, I don't remember what his name was now. He left us after about 4 weeks in the server, but he came over from 30, and he was the head of our intelligence group coming out of 30. And he right away said, figure out the top three or four people, infiltrate, make sure you keep track of who's doing what and how their progress is. And he pointed out, TNN was one of the ones he pointed out back then, Southeast Alliance. Yeah, they were big. And we were actually kind of pleased. We landed Northwest and looked around. We made friends with the Elite very early on off to our flank. They were in the North. And what we noted was kind of curious was even though there were two or three really strong alliances, TNN, SEA, SSA came up fairly fast, and TAK, three of the five or six best alliances in the second, third week were all in the south or southeast corner of the map. So we took that as kind of the fortuitous landing. It's like when you're playing Civilization and you land and you look around and you have 19 resources all around your landing spot. And you say, yeah, this will be a good game. Mm. So we were happy. But we saw them pretty early on. I know that the Newts were aware of the Lions within about the first 5 weeks because the Newt Empire in the attempt to gather the 5th to 10th ranked alliances into a coalition was in earnest by about the 4th or 5th week. So it wasn't too long before the Newts were aware we were around.
Mm-hmm. It's a very kind of exciting time of a server, this first time, and there's a lot of activity in these various alliances. So let's start off with you, Krunk. So and you mentioned already you had a surveillance type of officer. How did you go about kind of finding the right people to the work in the, on the various tasks, so leading divisions or doing other stuff?
I think you have to let alliances and officers and players' roles evolve. In 30, we had a few people who tried to assign roles to people and force people into a mold, and it really doesn't work very well. People have natural desires and things that they like to do, and if you can let them evolve into it, it works much better. For example, we try real hard not to give people real specific orders on where to go. We tell them, see the reactor over there, 36 spaces away. Go for that. Gather up people around you as you go. We try not to form divisions by saying there's a division, these four people are in it. Instead, we look for the most active player and say, gather up the three or four people you regularly see online, move them to where you are, and become a division. And it seems to work very well that way. That's the whole model of why the Lions have been successful. Intelligence, map making, and things like that are things that people step up and say they like to do. Mental Zero has a weird ability to look at the map and draw pathways to the POIs through the easiest sniping bases. And the gentleman, I don't remember his name, but the gentleman who was our intelligence officer just really liked looking over the political landscape and figuring it out. And then POI management, I think there are a lot of players who like to look at the math on the POI.
And this would probably be, so if I turn to you, Wombus, so the political landscape at this point, that would be something you weren't aware of. It's kind of what you're saying, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was just aware of the idea that we wanted as many people as possible because numbers were power, at least, I thought, in the beginning. So, yeah, all that stuff I wasn't really paying much attention to.
So how did you keep up with the Lions for so long then? So it seems like these guys had a plan, they had some experienced players, but you were really up there and close to the Lions for a long, long time. And, you kind of fell a little bit back after the first war, and then there's a second war, but what was part of your success in kind of bringing out the best members and getting everyone working so hard?
I think what worked out well is, though I don't or didn't at that point understand the game itself, I was certainly one of the worst players in the Alliance in regards to the game. I did and do have an idea of, just how people work and leadership in a sense, and what needs to be done to make people happy, to motivate, and that sort of stuff. So I guess I'd attribute any success we had to that sort of thing. Also recognizing potential and skill in other people and delegating, that's something that I think I do fairly well. So it was sort of as I was learning the actual game, I was exercising more of the leadership side, and eventually the game stuff came along, and now I enjoy that part and play fairly well. But the beginning was mostly intuition and just, I guess, people knowing people and that sort of stuff.
Was there a certain time where you kind of got the feeling that you could actually win this and you started getting more competitive, or did you have that already from the start?
I would never play a game that I didn't think I could win. I don't find that fun at all. That's why we started as I referred earlier, in that other world. And then, as you can imagine, if a new person were to start in World 44, I don't care if they're the best player ever to hit the face of the earth, there's no way they're catching up and doing so with their own alliance and all of that. So that's why I said, hey, this isn't fun at all if we're not going to win. I don't play if I don't have a chance to win, so we just quit. And I recognized enough about the game at that point, especially since it's a time-dependent game. It's not like traditional RTS games where you enter into a game and then you leave and that's that. It's constantly going, as those that play this game know. So I recognized that if we did start off at the same time as everybody else, we would have a much better shot and at least have a chance to be competitive. Yeah, so if I didn't think we had a chance to do well, I wouldn't be playing. That's just who I am.
So Krunk, so with the obvious difference in your kind of origins and the way you looked at the game and the way the Newts looked at it, did you recognize that the Newts had a different experience base than you guys, or?
Well, Wombus had a handful of good players around him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Before I infiltrated, there were two or three strong players. Attack for Legion was a strong player. Quantum Blast is a great player. Amarnoff is a very good PvPer. And there's a handful of people with experience. So when I got in at the table, Wampus had a handful of people who were giving him...
Yeah, let's rewind a little bit that. You said something that might not everyone knows about, but you said infiltrated. So basically you're saying that the Lions put a spy in the Newt's organization fairly early on, right?
Very early on. Yeah, we sent actually two or three players out to the top two or three alliances. Contrived circumstances to get some of our mid-level players out and seeking positions with other alliances, and then working them up in the ranks of those alliances so that we could keep a tab on what was going on and who was at war with who and who wasn't. And just knowing who the enemies of your enemy are makes a great deal of difference, but also being able to watch how they're progressing, what their math is, who their better defense strategists are. If an alliance has no good PvP players in it, you can tell very quickly and their defenses are going to be substandard. If they don't have good POI management, you can tell that they're not going to keep track. To their credit, the Newts were the only people we actually kept tabs on after about 2 months because nobody else in the server was going to merit as a threat. There were a few that would be a nuisance or that would be necessary to make war on, but only the Newts posed a significant threat. A lot of people kept talking about trying to form a coalition, but reality plays out in these things where coalitions don't hold and confederations of alliances all end up turning on each other or not supporting each other the way they should, so that wasn't really a concern. Newts were the only ones who merited attention after about eight or nine weeks. Thanksgiving, I think. It was between Halloween and Thanksgiving that we pulled the rest of our spies out.
Did you ever respond with that tactic, Wombus? Or was this something you've stayed clear of in the Newts?
The challenge of that is that being a first-ranked alliance, it's very easy to get spies into other alliances because at that point your players are generally ranked higher and therefore a request for invitation from a higher-ranked player is usually received well from a lower-ranked player. When you look at it the other way around, where an alliance like mine, like the Newts, we only had a handful of people that ranking-wise would even merit an invitation into a first-ranked alliance like the Lions. And therefore, the idea of having to lose that player, which is obviously a large contributor to our cause, was very difficult and not something we wanted to do. We thought about it briefly, and actually, Krunk doesn't know this, I did have a spy in their alliance near the end, but by then it was...
Fantastic.
By then it was a little too late. But yeah, ideally we would have. But when you have the first foot forward like Krunk did, it's much easier to send spies down than up.
An accurate observation. I remember hearing that somewhere at some point in time.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that was one of our conversations that we had. It's definitely difficult to Definitely difficult to infiltrate up. It's much easier to infiltrate down, although down to the second level isn't super easy. The other difficulty that comes from infiltration is it's much easier to gather worthwhile intelligence down than it is up, because to some extent our position on spies has always been, come on in. We don't really have a secret game plan. There isn't a giant hidden agenda. Our position has always been, we intend to move forward, we intend to step on anybody who gets in the way of us, and if you don't bother us and you stay out of our way, you'll be fine. You know, our defenses are, there's no great secret there. If you have good intel, you can CNC opt your enemies and save up the films are available. If your alliance has attacked another player, you can see what their defenses are. Most people aren't going to take the time to shuffle their defenses every other day. Not even when you're in heavy PvP, it's just not worth it. So to a great extent, on the spy notion, me and Wombus shared Sun Tzu for a little while and had fun chatting about it. Come on in, look at the map, tell me what questions you have, and I'll be happy to talk with you about it, and then come and make your best attack. That's a whole lot easier position when you're in the superior position logistically or tactically. It's kind of hard to do that from the lower side. And everyone is at war with the number one alliance. The whole three-tier alliance concept was to make sure we had friends. Even when everyone else turns against us, we still have friends.
That is actually something I really want to switch to, because it seemed to me that the multiple alliance strategy was very early locked in. I guess maybe a plan crunk from the start. And I've seen that the newts did work on something similar. I can't remember to what degree the courageous newts or the third one, I can't remember the name of actually. What actually happened then? Did you have a plan? When did you start working on getting extra alliances?
Sure. That fell into just, I guess, my intuition, the idea that, okay, we have one full alliance. Why not make another one? At that point, I had convinced another alliance that was located just to our right, I don't remember their name at all, to become our sister alliance and therefore reap the various benefits that come with that type of agreement, blah, blah, blah. They started doing decently. They got up into rank 7 or something like that. They ended up being very PvP focused, player versus player focused, because at that time there was a lot of conflict. As Krunk alluded to, the south and the southeast was pretty densely populated with strong alliances. So we sort of had to deal with that right off the bat. Where things went bad with our second alliance, which was unfortunate, is that the leadership of that alliance, and I knew this was going to happen all along, was still independent of me, more or less. I didn't place them there. I didn't know them. I just recruited them more or less. So when the time came for sacrifices to be made for them in regards to POI sharing or placement or directions that were less than ideal for them, there started to be conflict. So as the world starts getting more tight, as we get closer to the center, there were situations where we were competing over POIs and, you know, there's just a whole lot of interpersonal conflict that happens when those type of situations come about. And eventually what happened is it was a week's worth of bantering back and forth between players. My players were begging me to let me kill let them kill the people that are bothering them, and getting all these messages, well, you said this and you blah, 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 blah. And eventually I just said to the leaders of, at that time, called the Courageous Newts, guys, we either need to form an agreement where we both understand what your guys' purpose is, or you're going to have to move along, because right now you guys aren't helping us. In fact, it's just making things worse. So yeah. And then from there, things were already hot and messy, so I assumed they would leave, and they did. And they found refuge with my friend Krunk. And, I believe now they're actually doing really well. They had good leadership skills. They're, I think, Eastern Europeaners primarily, so their English was less strong, so there was often communication issues aside from directional issues between them and I. But yeah, sadly that didn't go as planned. We just started a new world yesterday, and we are doing very, very well. Well in first place, and our second alliance is almost in second place. The big difference is that now I have people leading my second alliance that I trust, and there's a mutual understanding of the relationship between he and I, and that works a lot better when you can plan ahead like that.
And that sounds a little bit like exactly like the Lions set up the Tigers on 44. Can you talk about how you did that, Sprint?
Well, we were a feeder alliance on 30 or 32, whatever our prior world was. And so we were the recruiting alliance for the larger, higher alliance. It's a natural evolution where when you get to the front of the line, as Wombus is going to experience in that new world, when you're the first place alliance, everybody wants to join the first place alliance. So right. Recruiting the better players is not hard. It's trying not to break people's skulls too hard when you set them aside as not up to snuff. That's harder. So a tip to Wombus going into the future roster management in that other world.
I've already kicked a handful.
Yeah, that's that cruel overlord concept. You just have to smile at them and say, I'm sorry, you're just not varsity material, and move on. But by doing that very quickly, the Lions were, we came with about 30 players. We brought in and accepted everybody who asked for an invitation early on. and then just immediately started when we had better invitations, we would take the bottom three or four people, and just everybody knew, if you're not up to snuff, you're going to get the boot. And after about a week, we were ready to boot four or five people in one shot and said, okay, it's time to set up the feeder alliance. We started that with Jagnostic as the Tiger Wolves, and TTW ran for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then I had the message up a minute ago. I was looking back through old messages. Lumpy Ash, who's the head of TTOW, now he's co-CIC at the Lions, he came into the world, and we had known him on 30 in a nearby alliance we had been friends with, pushy friends, not the friendliest of friends, but he showed up and wanted to start in on this world. He wasn't looking forward to being retired in the other world when the big alliance got around to him. And it was probably the luckiest thing that happened to us here, because he jumped in and took over the Tigers, took all of the weight of doing the Second Alliance off of our shoulders, and knew all along running it up that it is a feeder. Anybody who wants an invitation to the Upper Alliance instead is deferred to the Lower Alliance, and the head of the Lower Alliance picks two or three people at regular intervals to move up, as the Upper Alliance picks the people who aren't performing and moves them down or out. And it forms a very natural progression. That actually worked until, there's a symbiosis that's positive for both alliances. Or when we go into our next world after we kill the end game on this, we actually plan to go in with three alliances at the beginning. We're going to actually go in with a red and a blue of the primary alliance and try to keep them as 100 players of interchangeable quality with a third feeder alliance. The problem that comes with a feeder alliance is there comes a day when they don't want to give up their best player to the upper alliance, because every time they give up their best players, it handicaps them back down. So where the Tigers want to be number two, they're always getting knocked back down when the Lions need a player. So that comes a moment where the secondary alliance says, hey, we're pretty good, we'd like to stand on our own 2 feet. The difficulty that's arisen from that we're still even working through is, the hierarchy has to always be defined, and everybody has to always understand the role of the different alliances, because the reason it works is that there's no animosity between the two, or three, or four. It is always symbiotic. The upper alliances have to always be helping the lower alliances, but the lower alliances also always have to understand that they'll never be in competition for the top spot to keep that symbiosis. The lower alliances are what they are, to a great extent, not entirely. They build on their own as well. But their initial draw of players and their ability to bring in good players is predominantly because they're coming in on the promise or theory of moving up. If you ask most of the players along the way early in the server, they'll tell you, I'm here because I want the chance to move up. So the Second Alliance wouldn't exist but for the First. But it's always important to make sure the people in the First Alliance remember we would not be as strong as we are, as safe as we are, as able to do what we're doing if we didn't have this giant crowd of the Second Alliance around us. And if you look at the satellite map for the world, part of the reason TLOW's been able to move without a lot of hindrance up until Christmas was because we had a crowd of TTOW around us, protecting us, taking up our old POIs, cleaning up the riffraff. And sometimes the Upper Alliance people forget that. Kyle Keeley was a good example of that. The main reason that we had a falling out was when it was time to acknowledge the endgame's approach and it was time to structure the three alliances back into clear stair steps so that everyone knows who will be in which alliance when we reach the endgame. Kyle didn't see the value of the lower alliances. It was us and them, and that's just not something that you can do in a multi-alliance group. It's never us and them. Us is all of us, and them is Wombus, the rest of the world. But yeah, the tiered feeder alliance, when you're number one, Wombus can tell you in that other world already, when you're number one, your roster is full. And,
right.
You know, you're struggling to fend off players, not recruit them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to head over to our little pro tip section. First, could you guys give your main thoughts on PvP? And I'm asking that question kind of in the larger perspective. So I'm not asking you to talk about base setups or things like that, or how to attack from the side or how to use support weapons or things like that, but in a larger perspective. So what role do you see PvP? So if you're a new Alliance leader, how should you start to think about PvP?
I had the privilege of, as Kronk alluded to earlier, taking in a few weeks in or months, I don't know, they actually all blur quite considerably, but two players who had a great deal of experience from a previous world that had gotten to the point where war was everywhere, and it was just months worth of war. And so they kept harping on and on about how everybody needs super high defenses, good support structures, And a lot of people don't like hearing that because they can't really think ahead very well. And they say, well, I want all my resources going into my army because that makes me stronger, which makes sense. But they being the two veterans that came in were very correct. Defenses are really a very important thing to get started off early. In regards to PvP in general, one thing that I did learn from Kronk is that it is important to be preemptive in your PvP, and that's something that we're definitely going to be doing in our new world, not waiting for other alliances to come in and attack us, but instead attacking them. That, some more context, we haven't given the listeners very much. As the Newts, my alliance, and then the Lions and Tigers and Bears and... No, there's no bears, but the rest
thought,
of them...
I thought about that, but only a few of us found it funny. It's an American joke, so...
Oh, is it? Huh.
Lions and Tigers and Bears is from The Wizard of Oz, and the Europeans...
Oh, that's right.
They're not fans of The Wizard of Oz.
Well, it was over Christmas break. I do remember that because I was woken up by my father-in-law way too early. He goes... The Lions just landed and are attacking us. And I'm like, are you serious? I'm going back to bed. I ended up not being able to sleep, got up and went on the computer. But sure, good memory. they attacked us in the first attack. It slowed us down a bit, but we ended up fending them off relatively quickly. It was a few days maybe, and then they went back. But they had accomplished their purpose. They had slowed us down. I remember I dropped off of the front line to attack them and did not anticipate such long holdover times for my base to recover. So it ended up being kind of a learning experience, as that whole server was for us. But the Lions eventually went back, and the Newts were forced to sort of recover. The Newts were always very good at PvE and collecting POIs. So that we went back to doing that, and eventually our bonuses got closer and closer to taking over first from the Lions, and then the second attack came, and it lasted longer, probably twice as long, maybe, I don't recall exactly. And the same effect was we were pulled off, and we lost bonuses, and we lost digging momentum and all of that. Eventually, they left again after we fended them off, and then just recently, within the past month, they came back again and essentially finished us off. I definitely think that is the way to do it. Most people, as I said before, are desperate to rank up and get stronger, and that usually means neglecting defenses for offense. So if you can pop in on people before they get that reality check, it's good for you.
So Kronk, so what's your your perspective from that situation? Is it an accurate tale?
The history of my wife had surgery on December 21st and was going to be laid up for 10 days, and I had to take off of work and was going to be sitting around waiting on her. And anybody who's been in a heavy PvP campaign knows, like Wombus said, you get woken up at really bad hours of the night and you don't get a lot of sleep, and we conspired around the fact that a few of us were on holiday and I was going to be literally down for 10 days where I could play pretty much straight 24-hour CNC for 10 days.
All good reasons to start a war, man.
Fabulous reasons. Plus my wife was stoned on hydrocodone next to me, so it was wonderful. legally prescribed, I will say.
Yes, of course.
The thing about PvP, I totally agree. When it's time to hit an enemy, you should hit them. The attacker in this game always has the advantage, and if you can maneuver, the biggest problem I think people have is they don't look at maneuver, and TNN learned that very quickly and got very good at it. Our second strike team stayed longer and did better, but that was because we were moving further ahead in the advantages. But TNN figured out the maneuvering aspect and that blitzkrieg warfare is not the way to go. Strategic chess warfare. But definitely hit before you get hit. But as a tip to other younger or less experienced leaders, don't PvP. That's the main piece of advice that I would give people. Early on, the alliances that get tangled in early PvP and get chewed up with little skirmishes and fights, it's a race at the beginning. It's really a matter of putting, and I think TNN did this too, it's a matter of putting a couple, two or three watchdog players who have a couple of really heavy PvP bases, so if anybody nibbles at your flanks, you have a couple players who can go pound the hell out of them. But everybody else needs to keep their nose pointed in. The enemy gate is down, always down, and dig and move to the center. When PvP starts to loom, your players should have been sinking money into their defenses all along. Your players should have been getting ready for it all along. But don't waste your CP and your RT until somebody makes you, either by attacking you or by crowding you, or by going somewhere you want to go. And if they get in your way, kill them. But don't go looking for PvP. The players who land and say, we are a PvP alliance, they're a nuisance. They're not going to last. They're not going to be important. Wait until you have to fight. When you do have to fight, preemptively strike and strike decisively. The first two attacks on TNN, I think Wombus understands, but a lot of people didn't, including some of our allies. In the first strike team, we didn't call it a war. It was a strike team. Their goal was to go in and attack TNN to draw TNN into the fight. We sent, I was there, we sent four or five of our weakest players. Mm-hmm. We were stronger than TNN, so our weakest players were their mid-level players, or even their upper third. But we didn't send those players to defeat TNN. We only sent six or seven guys. We sent them to do just what Wombus said. We wanted their best players to come off the front line to come kill us, because we could kill their middle and lower ranked players with impunity. They had to bring their better players back to stop us. And if their better players are fighting our weaker players, our better players are back home digging, mm-hmm. and their better players are fighting a war. Mm-hmm. When they defeated us, and they did very soundly, after about 5 days, we sounded the retreat and pulled back. That was right around New Year's. And then the second strike team came down and was with the exact same purpose. We had no illusions we were going to defeat them at that point. Guys from South actually got very upset with us, because when we showed up and we were allied with them, we fought the battle, and then when the battle was starting to turn, because TNN again pulled all of its better players in and started trouncing us, we told guys from South, okay, we've done what we had to do, let's all get out of here, come back to our home, recuperate in our backyard, and then we'll come back in a couple of weeks and kick their ass. And guys from South did not understand that. They had a lot of problems with that, because they wanted to stay and fight. And the fact of the matter was, TNN had it all over us. They kept saying, well, bring more of your people. And no matter what we tried to do, we couldn't explain it to them. The goal is not to bring the best of our players here to fight in this war. The goal is to make TNN bring the best of their players to fight against our crappy players. Mm-hmm. And so don't fight. When you do have to fight, go first and go decisively. But also keep your eye on what your mission is. Is your mission to destroy the enemy alliance? Or is it just to make them lose? And if the goal is to make them lose, getting them off their mission is all you have to accomplish. TNN's still on the map, as far as I'm aware. And I know a lot of the players have left, but the alliance is still out there. The elite are still out there, and we've been fighting them for months now. The nature of the game precludes you from destroying an enemy. The goal is simply to make them so marginal they don't matter. And that was where eventually, with the blockade unit that went down and blocked TNN,
in that last attack in the last 3 or 4 weeks or so. We got in front of them, and they couldn't get around us. So that, don't PvP unless you have to. That's the moral of that.
Well, I can confirm that TNN is still on the map. I think I had 36 incoming during the night just 2 days ago or something like that. And my base happened to be just on the front line. I guess the main last front line between Noble Newts and the Lions, I think.
Are you in the blockade?
Yeah, I'm the guy who's sitting on the front of it, I think, for the last 4 weeks. So
at one point on that, I agree with Kron because he agreed with me. Whenever you see red land in your backyard, it, even if, as Krunk said, you're sending your worst players, psychologically, people freak out because they have their weakest bases with no defenses holding POIs in the back, and they just feel extremely vulnerable because they are. And that forces the Homeland Alliance to make difficult decisions like we had to, because the options are, one, don't confront them because we know they're just trying to get us off the front lines, and then they kill all our cash bases and take our POIs. That's not an option. Or, two, take our diggers and confront them just like they want, and eventually, as the days go by, decrease more and more in the ranking and the POI bonus, more importantly. So that type of long-term strategy is exactly what should be done. There's, right, as Kronk said, there's no illusion that, I mean, your base dies, you get to respawn, guys. You're not dead and out. So alliances, as long as they're tenacious, can keep bothering you, but to slow them down and eventually make them insignificant is what the real goal is, as Kronk said.
If you can mention the major thing that you feel that you have learned from having the Newts as competition in this world, what would you say that was?
That even though you might have an advantage over an enemy with some significant POIs or scores, rank scores are very deceptive, and the fight is not between 50 players and 50 players. It's between the 6 gunslingers from each side, and the number 2 or 3 or 4 alliance can have just as good as 6 gunslingers as the number 1 alliance, or better. So you got to be real careful not to presume that you're 12 billion point lead is means you're going to trounce the other guy, because you're not. And if they're tenacious, and if they've got a few folks giving them some good pointers and they rally quickly and pay attention, you know, prickly pear defenses develop quickly. People learn that the walls of the Forgotten require sapping. And all of a sudden, the guys that should be a relative pushover aren't. And TNM wasn't going to be a relative pushover anyhow, but don't underestimate your enemy and expect that they'll stay in the fight even when you don't necessarily think they should. And if you underestimate them, you'll regret it.
And then what about you, man, Mombus? So what is it? Is there anything you feel you've learned from being a competitor with Alliance in this world?
I guess the biggest thing is just the idea of how to have multiple alliances function decently. It's still kind of rough waters, and Kronk was alluding to that it's a mix of not wanting them to become so disillusioned and seeing themselves as the backseat that they want to just leave or abandon you, but at the same time helping them recognize that, hey, you are and will always be the second alliance. You're not going to pass us. And I think Kronk handled that very well. I didn't get to see a lot of the dialogue going on there, but between the conversations that I had with him, although unknowingly, I learned a bit about his leadership style in that way.
Okay, cool, guys. It's been great having this chat with you. I'm absolutely sure this will be an interesting thing to listen to for a lot of the players, especially in the alliances that we do have. Possibly for World 44, and let's say maybe for the rest of the community. Any last last word sounds bad in English. any final remarks you guys want to make?
Last words is good.
Last words work, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to know who's shooting who.
So, any chance you guys will be joining forces or competing again on the other worlds? You think?
I'm always up for a rematch. We just have to agree on which world and when we land.
Yeah, I'm good for a rematch. I'd love to have a second round with me and my alliance having an idea of what we're doing. So maybe in the future.
All right, guys. I think we're gonna wrap that up. So thanks a lot for your time and your perspective on this. And yeah, that was a pleasure for me and a thrill to get you by. My tongue is twisting now. All to right. Get you both on on this call and get your views on this. So thanks for that. And we'll catch you later, yeah?
Yeah, thank you very much.
See you around.
Some interesting stuff there. That was a nice interview, Total.
Yeah, thanks, man. I thought the guys delivered like champs.
They most certainly did. So thanks, guys, for everyone involved, and especially to our interviewees. So Mehdi from the Elite, Jenga from the Azure Knights, Alastius from Cabal, Wombus from the Newts, and of course Krunk from the Evwar Group. Any final thoughts or words from your side, Total?
Oh yeah. We got to thank Phenomic for pimping us on their Facebook page. That was awesome.
We most definitely should.
Yep. And then also a final shout out to LunoDNB. He's a guy who gave us this awesome intro music. So if you go to SoundCloud.com and you find LunoDNB, search for the track called EH, and that's our song.
So let's hear it again.